Welcome back to Reflections. Your host, Jorge Gonzalez. And at the end of the last segment, we were talking about this article on what science says we've been getting wrong about exercise and promoting the stairs as one of the great exercises. And one of the things that the author says is that anyone who has ever prepared for a race will be familiar with the question, what are you training for? At some point, I realized that I'm really training for, whether I acknowledge it or not, is the life I want to lead when I'm older. If the goal is living independently and get out of a chair unassisted, something has to change for many Americans. So that, you know, and it's vigorous. I mean, what we're talking exercise, because of course, walking around and doing whatever you have to do, whether it's shopping and laundry and you know, whatever you have to do, is better than sitting on the couch, that's for sure. But what we're talking about is, you know, 30 minutes, that you don't need to start that way, but 30 minutes a day of vigorous exercise where you get your heart pumping and you feel a little bit of sweat and you get that benefit on it. So there was an article that I haven't been able to find, but it basically was arguing on the benefits of diversity, the value of diversifying, and as the Rudolf Tanzi says, you know, he does biking and then walking, and I'm talking about swimming, so he's kind of in line with the diversity. And I again, with you know, the exercise of the daily, you know, stairs and walking, which is really good, but then you're forsaking the upper body, which biking and swimming, you know, helps, and even stationary biking, you know, you're over and you're leaning on the handlebars and using that to a great extent. So it's I think it's important to diversify the exercise, and in that regard, one of the great suggestions and recommendations was my sister Chrissy getting me into triathlon, and not only does it work different parts of the body, it also sort of eliminates for me part of the boredom of doing the same thing every day. It also permits flexibility, because there's some days that you really don't want to run. It's raining like crazy, and so you can do something else, stationary bike inside. When you're traveling, sometimes what you have to do is you have to indoor swimming pool, or because it's a really bad day, snowing and ice and everything else, and cold, it's crazy. You don't want to go out and run. It's painful. It's not necessary. So having different exercises, and I have about four or five, is valuable, because in addition to biking and swimming and running, which are the triathlons, I love in the hiking in the either in the mountains when I travel outside of Puerto Rico or in Calle, and not only do you benefit from nature and dealing with the agricultural products, but the up and down hills of Calle and the farm are fantastic, not only for the mind but for the body. I look forward to it every moment I have a chance to get out there and do that. The other thing that kind of with exercisers, this the choice of team versus individual, and in groups, you know, with versus by yourself, with trainer or not having. So, and this I find, you know, is has to be very, very personal. I get a little bit frustrated the last, you know, 20 or 30 years trying to put my exercise together with other people. I just find it that to organize it and then once that particular day we're going to do something together to get everybody together, and people have different levels and have different problems, or And so I rather do it individually, just whenever I have the chance, and I get up whenever the hour is, and I go whatever I'm going to do and get it done. And I also have found that you do need coaches and trainers at whatever sport, whether it's scuba diving or the first times you go to the gym or any kind of a sport, you know, golf and tennis, et cetera, you do need it. But continuous coaching, I have not found it beneficial, because mostly when I get into sports, it's to have fun and to do the exercise. And I have not been in, you know, other than when I was in college and high school, I don't do sports to win medals. That has not been the goal. And so in that regard, you know, I don't really need either people to push me or trainers to push me, because that's just not my goal. But again, this is very, very personal, and there are people that really do need the social portion of it to get out and do it, and they do need coaching and trainers continuously or sporadically. So it's up to each one of us as to what works for us. But that is the other thing that in team terms of sports, and now I'm going back more to college, and you know, but people do continue with, you know, baseball and tennis doubles and you know, even pickleball now is very, very popular, and need a group to get that, at least one other person, but usually there's a huge group that gets together and they change partners and all. And you know, that's important. Not only do you get the exercise, but you get the social interaction. You get, so it's a twosome there that works. The other thing with exercise, and I was reflecting my grandson who now is at Andover, and he's taking up crew, and I was just reflecting on crew as one of the sports. I was telling him and his parents that in an article I read that. In terms of the financial investment banking business and banking, an article I read way back saying that they really like, in terms of recruiting, athletes and also military persons and athletes of the different sports, the one they found was most effective in terms of developing what they consider good team players and all it was crew, and it is clear that is one of the great sports. There's no I don't think there's any sport that requires working and as a team more than in crew. And everybody has to pull their oar, as we say. And in fact, that's a saying, and has to do it to the strength of the strength that they can. They've got to end at the end of the race completely exhausted, putting every inch of energy they have into sport. And it's also very, very physical and very, very technical. So it's a sport that requires tremendous discipline, tremendous work ethic, you know, in terms of going out there and physically getting your body to the level you have to get. And tremendous you know, teamwork on together on the crew. So these sports that I do. The other thing I was just reflecting on, I convinced my grandson. I took him back to Andover during the recent vacation, and I talked him into going to a nice hockey game. He has played soccer. And he said, "Well, okay, I'll go maybe for a little while." But I had the sense, you know, he likes soccer and hockey has more or less the same you know, tendencies, a little bit different. And what I hadn't really paid attention to when I compared it to soccer, a lot of it is similar. But one thing that is not similar is that in hockey, you have three lines for offensive and two lines for defense, and both you know, exert their energy to the utmost, and when they're, you know, when they're completely tired, that's when they get off the ice. That's the normal. Whereas in soccer, there's very little substitution, and there's a lot of time for people to not really be engaged back and forth. Hockey is back and forth, and very exerting. So we pointed out some of the differences. Of course, I'm super prejudiced with hockey as being very, very fast, and each goal is important. It's not like basketball, a game. That one ended up 6-2 in favor of Andover, which is a pretty high score. It could be 1-0, and usually it's in the 3-4 goals versus the other. The other team with one or two or three, so a goal is important. It's in that sense quite very similar to soccer, and you suffer with each shot, in whether it goes in or doesn't go in. So he enjoyed it, and of course another, I think, beauty of ice hockey, it's indoors, so you don't have to worry about the temperature. You have to worry about it's snowing. And you're usually pretty close, at least in the college and the high school. You're pretty close to the action, and it's pretty everything that's happened. You can see it pretty well, although it moves pretty quickly. I kind of smiling. I remember one of the areas that I had continuous discussion with my father, and one of the few areas that we didn't agree. Was team sports and sports in college and all versus a sport that was more individual and is really really for life in this case he was a big tennis fan and he did boxing he played handball his sports were more individual. Although there were doubles, and even there he was kind of took over, it was more individual, and he argued that I should be playing tennis in college and in high school, and that these sports, football, ice hockey, baseball, were sports that were short lived, and I wouldn't be playing them the rest of my life, And I would be arguing that I could play tennis the rest of my life, but the only time I can play these team sports were at Andover and at Harvard, that was my argument. Plus, the fact is that in both those sports, they weren't that well. They weren't as popular as football, hockey, and baseball in terms of people watching and all. So and also of course in New England, playing tennis can be pretty frustrating, once you get past October, or until you reach May. So it's not really conducive for tennis in New England. So we had that argument and continuously one of those things that you do in life, you keep on having the discussion, knowing the other parties, the other side's arguments, and you still have them. So that goes from field, the exercise, and these articles that came up on article, on exercise, which I found interesting. There was another article was really good, and it kind of complements the article in Shield, which I said is brain aging and it's more physical. There's another article, and this is in the Guardian he's an author, Frank Tallis, Tallis. And his book is Wise, Finding Purpose, Meaning, and Wisdom Beyond the Midlife. This the article is actually an interview of him, and it's really very good. It's about 10 pages, so it's hard to summarize it. But I'm gonna give it a shot. Because I think it's important, and then as offshoots to that article, a couple of things that also came up, this week. The title of the article itself, not the book, Adjustments Must Be Made: How to Live Well After Midlife, and it's by Ida Edemariam, Edemaram, and this is by The Guardian, which is really one of the good publications. And Frank Tallis, he starts off by, he says, we have never lived so long, so well, nor had more available advice on how to do so. Don't smoke, don't drink, don't eat ultra-processed foods, lift weights, get outside, learn a language, cosmetic or surgery have never been so available, so advanced, nor so widely used. We take for granted medical procedures that previous ages would have considered miracles. And something's clearly working. Average global life expectancy is the highest in recorded history. The fastest growing demographic is now the over 80s. Huh, I read this perversive. Okay. That's me, And then he says, there is much public hand-wringing about the burdens this aging population will place on Earth and care systems, on health and care systems and on younger people. What is far less talked about, argues the clinical psychologist Frank Tallis in his new book, Wise, is how to get older well, not just in physical, but in mental good health. And so, it complements the other one, which is more physical in nature. And then on page five, he says, true middle age brings rigidities, settlings that can make achieving the openness this requires more difficult, and the new can always be frightening. But Tallis writes, you can cling to outmoded ways of being, adjustments must be made, or you will find yourself living a life that doesn't match the reality of your physical condition and circumstances. Existential discomfort at this point is normal, and rather than rushing to fix it or doubling down on what has worked before, he and many of those he read in coming to his conclusions recommend listening, waiting, trying to be open, as he puts it now, the calling experiences. And a little bit further on, he says, he has come to see this as the main task of the second half of our lives, to join ourselves up, to link the outer and the inner, unconscious life, and to become as whole, as integrated, and therefore as resilient as we can be on the terms that make sense to us and to us alone. And I like that paragraph and that sentence because, it emphasizes that this is an individual decision and requirements. And what's good for you out there may not be good for me or for somebody else that's listening. It's very personal. Similar to my definition of well-being, living your personal values with a sense of self-satisfaction and peace, your personal values. So this goes along. Then on page eight, he goes in artificial intelligence and all. And he says, do not outsource the work then to AI, artificial intelligence, or to other people. Tallis remembers how, as a bright working class North London teenager, he was born in Highbury to a southern Italian immigrant family and went to an underperforming Catholic state school in Tottenham. This is in parentheses, a parenthetical, which incidentally I can relate to, because I went to an underperforming Catholic school at Saranac Lake. He fell for a while under the influence of a guru. It's a bit embarrassing now, but it seemed that pretty much everybody was doing it in the 70s. And so I have come firsthand experience, which I found very instructive. It says he did not come to reject the need for spirituality, he argues. Instead, that some sort of broadly defined spirituality is central to any kind of healthy growth that we might achieve. But it taught me to be skeptical. So open up. Don't rely. Oh, Hector is waving. I got so involved. The second segment is over. So we'll continue a little bit with this article that I find fascinating. We're just about to finish, so we'll be right back after the pause. This is your host, Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections.